I feel a slight bump and open my eyes. We are passing through a patch of turbulence. The seatbelt sign illuminates and automatically I check that mine is secure. A steward passes through the cabin, sees I am awake and asks if I need anything. I ask for a glass of sparkling water. Within a moment, it is delivered complete with ice and lemon. Would you like a blanket, Mr. Waite? I thank him and refuse his offer. He disappears through the curtain as my neighbour turns fitfully in his semi-conscious sleep. I sip my drink and leaf through the airline magazine. Maps fascinate me. I remember the time when my guard brought me an encyclopedia, the letter M. I turned to the map of Maine and spent hours wandering in my imagination along the rugged and broken coastline. Now I examine the global map, and in particular, the map of Australia. According to Qantas, all roads lead eventually to Sydney. On the world map, I look for Lebanon, my involuntary home for almost 5 years. There it is, a chunk of coastal land carved from the flank of Syria. It was there on the shore of the Mediterranean that I began to see the many faces of solitude. A voice booms in the distance. I can't make out what is being said, as there is a constant steady roaring in my ears. Lights begin to flicker, and suddenly they explode before my eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, shortly we will be landing in Bangkok. Please make sure that your safety belt is securely fastened and your seat is in the upright position. As I awake from dozing, I recognize the ritual formula repeated thousands of times daily the world over. Will you get out here for a while? My neighbor questions me. He is ready to leave. I might stretch my legs. It's many years since I was in Bangkok. Like all proud citizens the world over, he tells me how the city has changed, how the airport has developed. We have our problems, of course, but we're working on them. The doors are unlocked. There is the usual confusion as overhead lockers are emptied and the crew members endeavour to work out which exits will be used. Goodbye, sir. Thank you. Goodbye, sir. Thank you. The cabin staff dispense the final benediction before assembling their bags with telescopic handles and marching in their 2-day sojourn to a downtown hotel room. Before leaving the plane, I attempt to remember the terminal building as I last knew it. It was quite small, and there were no more than half a dozen shops. One sold inexpensive silk ties and scarves, another elephant leather wallets and luggage, and a third the ubiquitous duty-free spirits and perfume. Unsurprisingly, a work of transformation had taken place. Now the corridor stretches endlessly to my left and right. The items on sale have multiplied a thousandfold. I take a bored cursory glance at the Emporia and set out to find the toilets, which, for some inexplicable reason, are hidden behind a maze of passageways. In the final departure lounge, some 500 travellers wait to board their plane. "You're Mr. Waite, aren't you?" A slightly built man with a pencil moustache stands by my side. "I've read your book. How would you feel now? Must be strange to be with so many people." He asks the same question that thousands of people ask, and I tell him that I am well. I don't tell him that I have changed. I don't tell him that whilst I don't find it difficult or object to being with large groups of people, I prefer the quiet of solitude. I don't tell him that this very day I am setting out on a pilgrimage to explore that very subject. I want to meet people whose experience is deeper and richer than my own. I want to know how they embrace solitude, and if the embrace crushed them, or if it brought a little joy, a little life to a fading mortal existence. I want to hear the different songs of solitude. I want to blend my voice with that great solitary cry of humanity that echoes and reverberates throughout the universe. To say all this would be impossibly pompous and tedious. "I'm pleased you are well," he continues. "Many of us thought about you." I thank him again, and he disappears into the crowd. Although there are times when I don't particularly welcome an intrusion, I confess to being moved by the genuine concern of so many. It's as though they are saying, How would I have coped? Would I have gone mad? Or would I have been able to find a life-bearing embrace from the experience? They are some of the questions I continue to ask myself. How did I survive? What meaning can be found from solitude? Do I have a distinctive solitary song? At what point does that song merge into a great chorus? The flight is called, and we begin the slow shuffle past the desk clerk, the long march to the aircraft, the final squeeze into our seats. I am already on my pilgrimage. I'm beginning to hear the first bars of a haunting melody.